welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. I am your trusty host, Neil Horwitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and also get more information at dsmsports.net where there's other content and episodes. Hit me up on LinkedIn as well. And, of course, you can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, and all podcast platforms. Really psyched for today's show. Someone I've known for a while, been wanting to have on the podcast for a while, and we got to catch up talking today to Chris Koivisto. He is the Senior Director of Accounts for STN Digital. Been there for about a year and a half now after really creating a hell of a legacy with the Portland Trailblazers, and now gets to work on all sorts of fun projects with STN Digital. And we get to pick his brain about what he learned coming up in social media, get some great takeaways, some great insights, and really recommend this episode. I think you'll come away learning a lot and definitely enjoy yourself. Some fun anecdotes as well. But before we get to the chat with Chris, we have this episode's helpful tool. This episode's helpful tool is a tool used to create video on the go, on mobile, especially vertical video. Instagram, and I recommend looking this up if you haven't seen it already, released a Dropbox file, basically a PDF that on Dropbox that basically outlines some best practices for creating vertical video. It was part of their push around IGTV, Instagram TV, where, you know, their YouTube challenge or whatever you want to call it, where they're trying to get folks to start IGTV channels where they'll post longer form vertical video. Definitely a cool thing to watch, and we've seen some good stuff already. Instagram wants to help people create better vertical video, create better video for IGTV, so they release this best practice, and it lists several apps, so I'll be trying some of the apps, and I'll give you some reviews on here. And one I tried, which is this episode tool, is called Video Leap. It is a freemium app. I only tried the free version, so there's a lot of different things you can do with the premium version that are locked. But the good news is the free version is also white labeled, so there's no watermark or anything on the final product that you export for use on Instagram, Snapchat, wherever you may use it. And it's a really cool tool. It's a really good video editing tool. There's a lot you can do with it. I mean, especially once you get the hang of it, you can move a little more quickly, and you know what everything does. You know how to get around a little bit, and you can create some pretty good mobile video. Everything from different filters to transitions to additional layers, to text overlays, to adding in background music and even background sound effects, to pixelating, and it's a lot of stuff you can do. You can start playing around right now. You can add in additional things on top of the videos. You can add in photos and really create yourself a nice composition that just easily exports and saves to your camera roll. Now, there is a limit on the number of layers, so that's one other thing that is a part of the pro version. They'll try to get you to upgrade, of course. So that's one limiting element. But to create some pretty darn good videos on the go, whether it's videos that are already on your phone, or of course you can always shoot more video as well and really do a lot with it. You can create some pretty good stuff for IG Stories or for IGTV right there when you're sitting with your mobile device. So give it a go. It's one Instagram recommended and one I'll recommend as well, whether you use the free version or the premium version. So get it today. It's called Video Leap. You can get it on the App Store and start creating some cool vertical videos. I look forward to seeing them. All right, that's the episode's helpful tool. We'll be right back with Chris Koivisto of STN Digital. All right, back from this episode's helpful tool, and I'm really psyched for today's guest, someone I've been aware of for a while. I feel like I've met him a while ago, but I'm really pleased to have on the podcast today, Chris Koivisto. He is the Senior Director of Accounts for STN Digital, and welcome to the podcast today, Chris.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me, man.
Really psyched to pick your brain. You are seriously one of the best out there in the industry, and I'm saying that you're not, so no need for humility. but really excited to pick your brain. And before we get to this episode's interview, before we get to the meat of the discussion, I want to hear about your career path. Tell us how you got involved in the game, and any tips for folks that want to do what you do.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my biggest thing when people always ask me, coming out of high school, coming out of college, or whatever. The path that I took, I got really lucky, and it probably doesn't exist anymore. I got started back in 2007 when I applied for an internship with the Portland Trailblazers online, and got that internship, and kind of parlayed that into another internship, and then eventually a full time job, and the first leg of my career. But that was 2007. Now 11 years later, there are so many different ways to promote yourself online, on social media, that I probably would not have stuck out in the crowd had I been in today's landscape. So, that's kind of my route. Started out in PR for 7 years with the Blazers. And then in the last three, I was our managing editor, digital content, so all of the social for the team, and then also the arena, the Moda Center and the Memorial Coliseum. Very nice. Any events and shows that came through there.
So were you working while you were in school during internships, or did you did you graduate and you're like, okay, let's go for it? How did that kind of come about?
Yeah, I was, I just obsessed with basketball growing up. Mm-hmm. And really had every intention of, continuing through college and then whatever else led after that. But once I got to, I was at a community college, was ready to play, and my girlfriend at the time was, she was at a four-year school at Oregon State, who I believe just won the College World Series a few minutes ago. I saw kind of the culture of a four-year school and was like, yo, this is where I want to be, rather than living in an apartment at a community college, with a bunch of strangers. So I applied to the only school that was still accepting applications, the only four-year school, and that was Western Oregon University, which was about 20 miles from Corvallis. So we were able to see each other quite a bit. But then I just kind of stayed. A lot of my friends transferred in and, were playing basketball and football. And, it was a good community. It was a smaller school, but a lot of people from Portland were there. So it was a good spot. And about my junior, started my senior year, I wasn't playing sports. And, my roommates were always out on the road on road trips. And I was just like, what am I going to do with my life? So I applied online for an internship with the Blazers. And at the time it was, I think it was called like the Digital Street Team member, or whatever that is, or whatever that was. But basically it was kind of managing and creating buzz, I guess viral, sensation around the Blazers on MySpace. So that's how very far back nice. I go. And that kind of dates myself a little bit, but after that, I wanted to keep my foot in the door and applied for a internship in communications, which, is, it's PR, sports media relations, and really learned from some of the best people there. Mm-hmm. And did basketball PR and then also corporate PR. And then, 7 years later, a position opened up in digital, and I had built a good rapport with our president and CEO. And he really wanted me to kind of make that leap over to social and digital. And so they kind of built a position that would fit my skill set and allow me to grow a little bit. And, from there it was, they gave me a lot of a long leash and a lot of leeway and a lot of tools to play with, and we had some success. And then from there, about a little over a year ago, February 2017, I was hit up by the owner of STN Digital, who I'd kind of heard of. They had worked with the UFC, and we'd like some of their work. But I Googled them, saw their sizzle reel and their location in San Diego, and I was kind of getting stale. We had, gotten some recognition for what we'd been doing on social and didn't really feel like there was a whole lot more challenge left.
Yeah.
And, jumped at the opportunity and, fast forward, 14, 16 months later and here we are in San Diego.
Very nice. So that's awesome and really cool how you, worked your way up, and that's why internships are so great. And even if it's what you're going to end up doing the rest of your life or not, it's a way to get your foot in the door, start getting experience. And obviously, you came in like I did as well in the industry at a time when stuff was changing pretty rapidly. So I guess you kind of inherited the digital and social as it started to grow up there. But I guess tell me what that genesis was like. Were you just – was there a Facebook and a Twitter, and then all of a sudden this position it was created for you, and then it was like, help us get value out of this, or help us go viral, or what was it? What was the genesis like, and what were the early goals, I guess? How intentional were the goals?
Well, being in PR, and I guess that was kind of like right at the crux when social was really becoming PR. Every tweet was essentially a press release. So, I kind of had a progressive mind and was active on social in my own right. And once our new president got there in 2012, he kind of took me under his wing and I helped him grow his personal brand a little bit on Twitter. And, anything else he needed around, the office, the city, whatever it was. He kind of grew a liking for me. And so our social media manager, at the time, Dustin, he's the biggest Blazer fan I've ever met. So I've never really asked him, but I don't know why he decided to leave. And it was the year after, it was like a month after Damian Lillard hit, a game-winning, series-winning shot against the Rockets. And that summer they said, there's a headcount opening up and we really want you for this job. We think you'd be a good fit. Just having a PR background, you kind of have a good gut sense of, how far you can push the limits, and get away with things. Cause you're taught to be so buttoned up and, not misspeak or speak out of turn. So carrying that over to social, there was a little bit of a learning curve where, at first I was kind of tweeting play by play and really, playing it safe. But right around the first, probably mid preseason, early part of the regular season, of what was that? Probably 2015-16. GIFs started to be a thing on Twitter. So I remember asking my boss at the time, TJ Ansley, who's now, with the hockey team, hey, can we use a GIF like once every half? And it was like pulling teeth, trying to get him to say yes. and fast forward and now it's just like, we've gone through GIFs becoming, kind of, edgy to becoming played out. And now everyone's, doing their custom thing. But I remember, back in the day, people were using Seinfeld GIFs and Simpson GIFs. Right. And it was, at the time too, it was kind of, because we were allowed to push the envelope a little bit, you got to kind of see the way that things would work and the way that things wouldn't. And you kind of noticed a trend where, the GIFs and the media that, people would use on team accounts were really kind of, skewed towards the individual social media manager's, preference in pop culture. So if, the social media manager for, I'm just going to throw out the Houston Rockets was a big Seinfeld fan, he would usually, just naturally use a lot of Seinfeld GIFs. So, being able to identify that after the first year and, really moving into really custom and, strategic placements. Our second year was kind of fun because we, every team that we played, we spent a lot of the off season, kind of cataloging and librarying, different sets of GIFs and reaction GIFs based on cities. So, with, let's say Detroit, we had like some Eminem GIFs or some Big Sean GIFs or something that's specific to Detroit. When we're playing Houston, there was some Beyonce and there was, other people from Houston. So we really try to kind of stay ahead of the curve as people were catching up and starting to do the same things. And just naturally, none of us like to do the same thing everybody else was doing. So we're always looking to see what was next. So that was kind of a fun progression to see. Now I don't think anybody really uses, the traditional Giphy GIFs. But that's, it's grown quite a bit since those days.
So even before, GIFs on Twitter were a thing, like, I think you guys early on and, I guess the NBA overall as a league started creating voice. I actually had TJ on the podcast a while back, I want to say 3 years ago or so, and it was really interesting to hear about how you guys were looking to, almost brand the players a little bit, have custom content, whether it's graphics or little inside jokes and memes. And I want to hear a little about, I think right now, having especially just followed like the Twitter Sports Summit was really interesting to see how important voice really is. And I think it's something that you spoke to even about how, the type of gifts that people were sharing was kind of tied back to what their personal personality was like or preferences were like. And I think voice is really something that transcends that individual behind the account and really is more about who the Trailblazers are, who the team is. So tell me a little about how the voice of the Blazers, how the attitude of the Blazers on social, I think particularly Twitter is where voice stands out the most, how it was created and how, what was kind of the base behind it and how much discussion internally there was with the higher ups. And of course you can come from the PR background, probably know that just as well as anybody.
Yeah. I think we point back to, that time when, we got a new president and CEO, kind of running things. He brought up, a marketing guy from the LA Kings where, he came from AG Sports.
Yeah.
And the LA Kings, this was right on the heels of, they were the first team to really have any type of voice on social or tone on social that, kind of rocked the boat. So he brought that with him and kind of expected that team to kind of follow suit. And, they did a pretty good job, for sure. When I got in there, that's really what I tried to do, was just embody that kind of, you know, not snarky, but I guess there was a lot of hyperbole that was being used. There was a lot of, you know, especially being, we were always the underdog. So my favorite season, I think, was my second year doing social. And we had this kind of us against everybody mentality where we didn't get a lot of attention, but we were winning a lot and still being overlooked. So that underdog tone really played in, and especially when national media would, you know, predict that, you know, an LA or a New York or a Houston or Atlanta, a big market team, would win or beat us or whatever it is. So we definitely kept an eye on that. And there, and then there was a lot of bloggers in Portland, you know, that really took, they kind of had the tone that I wanted to embody. So actually during games, I would have a column on my tweet deck of, you know, 6 to 8 local bloggers, mm-hmm. That were, I mean, Portland has this kind of like hipster vibe that, you know, we're, you know, anti-establishment, you know, cooler than everybody else type of like swagger.
Keep Portland weird, right?
yeah. So I tried to embody that a little bit, and, you know, it seemed to resonate with people. And so really leaned in on it and, you know, tried to take the voice of a fan, that was watching the game with other fans, rather than, you know, talking with them rather than talking at them. Yeah. And some of the best times were when we would get blown out and, you know, we could kind of have a lot of fun strategically. I remember, like, you know, we got blown out by the Clippers by like 40 points, and there was zero highlights until the end of the game. Some bench warmer had a nice dunk, and we blew it up like he had just hit a game winning shot in the finals. Just because it's kind of tongue in cheek, you know, we're getting our asses kicked, so try to have some fun, not take ourselves too seriously, and you know, that seems to resonate with people, and I think a lot of teams are doing that now, but what's ironic is now the Blazers are kind of getting a little bit further away from that and thinking more monetization than, you know, fun and quirky and witty on social.
I definitely want to go down the monetization route with you. That's an area I certainly want to explore. But I do want to step back again to talk about how the content game kind of evolved as well. And I mean, you coming from a PR background and now, I mean, at STN, you guys are dealing with all sorts of creative content. So I imagine early on, your idea of content when you first started with the Blazers was, you know, I guess press releases, game notes. If you're really ambitious, you know, highlights on YouTube, I guess. And so when did content kind of shift from the traditional to, you know, original GIFs, from just quick hitters, from quick blogs, from, you know, from even creating a new content team? I know you guys have, you know, you had the in-house beat reporter there with the Blazers as well, Casey, I think.
Yeah.
So how did that kind of evolve, and why did it, and how difficult was it with PR to kind of say we don't have to do it the same way we've done it for the last whatever 30 years?
Yeah, I think you know, we had, you know, TJ gave us a lot of, he empowered us. And then above TJ was Dwayne, who came from the LA Kings. And he expected, you know, things to rock the boat and toe the line. I remember Meerkat, which came out before Periscope.
Yeah.
I remember downloading that while I was in the press room waiting for practice to open. And then using it just, you know, as you know, the last 20 minutes of practice is open to media and streaming. I remember seeing an email, like 3 emails come in from the NBA saying, stop streaming. And, you know, the app hadn't been approved, and I was, you know, I didn't think to get it approved. But anyway, a few months later in the playoffs, you know, I was given the directive to do use Meerkat or Periscope or whatever it was at the time. And, you know, we'll deal with the repercussions later. So we really had a lot of the, rebellious, you know, push back when we're told not to do things, to a certain extent. You know, we had our hands slapped, a couple of fines that were actually rescinded, so we never did get fined. You know, that's kind of the sandbox we played in, was that, you know, definitely not playing it safe, playing it as much of a wild card as we could. So I guess the transformation over the years, though, it started, I think my second year we hired a digital designer specifically to create, graphics for social. And it was kind of unheard of at the time. So, you know, I use the shit out of him. His name is Brian. He's actually now the director of digital in Portland. But, you know, we kind of thought the same way of like, let's do something different. Let's not do things that everybody else is doing. And we had a lot of late nights trying to figure out different quirks on Twitter and different sizes and specs and, you know, different nerdy things like that. So that's kind of where we started with all the custom content. And he was able to kind of knock out a bunch of stuff. And he enjoyed game nights, so he'd be there on game nights too. And then we took it a step further, and on media day, when everybody's doing their, you know, their mandatory shoots, we requested the last, you know, 3 or 4 minutes to just do like quick reactions, whether it's a wink or a smile or a nod or a frown or a shake my head. And then we chop all those up and, use them as reaction gifts throughout the season. So that's kind of where we started to get like the custom player specific content, that nowadays is extremely common.
Oh, that's I love that for sure. That's a, you know, great foresight as well to be able to create that stuff in advance and take advantage of, because you can really shoot a ton of great content in a matter of seconds or minutes, and it seems like you guys took advantage of that early on. And it's cool to hear how the content game kind of elders. So I do want to, you know, go into what you kind of were alluding to before with I guess the strategic goals of all this. I mean, yeah. It's creating a brand, it's creating a voice, it's driving, I guess, website traffic. But, you know, as you started to evolve there, and, you know, there started to be a higher demand maybe for metrics for proving the I'm not going to use the ROI term, but at least the value of what you guys were working on, and even planning campaigns, which I'm sure is a lot of what you do every day now with STN. What kind of went into that early on? How did it get better as you went along? And When did monetization become a major goal, or, you know, or did it just happen a little bit, you know, I guess after you left?
No, we definitely had goals, and our goals, the league would send out every week, they would send out metrics, and then every month I believe they did another set of metrics. But our goal, because everything the league did was based on volume, so you know, we would never have the engagement volume or the web traffic volume that you know, Lakers, Warriors, Spurs, you know, all these major brands had. So our goal was to be in the top 15, the top half in all web traffic metrics, which I believe we hit every single month. And then in terms of social engagement, to be top 5 in engagement rate, which I believe we hit pretty consistently too. So there were metrics to hit, but because of those metrics, I have a pretty analytical. So I would always take it, I remember pushing back with the league quite a bit on why I thought their reporting structure was garbage. Like they, it was a disadvantage. You would always see like Denver or Orlando, Indiana, like all these smaller market teams always at the bottom, the very bottom of these metrics. And it just wasn't right, because those go straight to your executives, and it makes them, makes those social teams look like they're not doing very well. So we were kind of in the middle there. And, you know, We had some techniques to definitely spike traffic. Anytime there was any sort of a scuffle, we would clip that right away. I would choose a thumbnail where it looks like the guys are going to fight and use the headline, you know, something, you know, very clickbaity. Yeah. So we had a lot of weeks where, you know, we were number one in video views or page views or whatever it is. Photo galleries were huge for us. And, you know, that's another lane we can talk about later, is photos.
Real quick, Chris, did that skew, like, how you guys decided how to share your content? Like, oh, we want to up our ranking this week in the website traffic. So let's, you know, post this thumbnail or image of a video, then let's link them back to our site, as opposed to posting it natively. Like, did that come into play when you guys trying to, I don't want to say game the system, but increase the numbers to I guess impress the exec team?
No, 100%. And it wasn't even about impressing the exec team on our end. I just wanted to impress our peers around the league.
Yeah.
But we would, you know, if we had a week where we fell out of the top 15 on photos or on views per visit, we'd go ham on photo galleries the next week. If we were down on video starts, we'd go ham on, you know, trying to clickbait people. You know, anything can be turned into content. I remember Damian Lillard was number 15 in the league in jersey sales, some, you know, something that came out in the summer, and turned that into a slideshow of, you know, Damian Lillard among the top jersey sellers in the league. And it was a slideshow of 15, and he was the 15th. And I believe that had something like 300,000 views overnight.
Wow.
And, you know, things like that, where you could really just kind of, you could game the system. I mean, that's
No doubt.
And that's eventually, that's what I would get to was like, hey, Dwayne, what do you want us to be? Do you want us to be number one in web traffic? I'll get you that. Do you want us to be number one in engagement? I'll get you that. Just tell me what you want and I'll figure out a way to get us there. And so there was 100%. It was definitely trying to, I guess, manipulate the numbers. We would go as far as looking at the schedule to see if we're playing on the local broadcast or the national broadcast, if it's a 4 p.m. or a 7 p.m. tip-off, you know, if it's east or west, and really predicting how our content would do ahead of time. So everything was about the data, you know, while we were kind of catching our breath in between the games.
Super interesting stuff there. And, you can definitely game what you want, especially when you're looking at those higher level metrics and not going quite as deep into, say, like, whatever, you know, direct ticket sales or direct, you know, sponsorship revenues. When did that next level start to come into play where, you know, social was looked at, whether it was paid social or whether it was creating sponsor assets? And, you know, how did that start to enter the picture, you know, during your time there with Portland?
Well, and you know, I point back to Dwayne. He was a very good, you know, he would block and tackle. Like, we never sold a ticket on Twitter. Twitter did not sell anything. We got 3% of our web traffic off of Twitter links, 25% off of Facebook links. So we had the data, and then we acted accordingly. So once we knew that you couldn't sell anything on Twitter, you know, this is before Twitter cards and all that. I mean, you can probably sell a little bit better now. But it was like, okay, anything we want to sell is going to be a paid campaign separate from the organic content we're creating. And then if you look at sponsorship, it was, you know, we were in a really good position because our Dwayne was able to get our sponsorship team to see eye to eye and realize that not all content is created equal. You can't just slap a Sprite logo on something and it's sponsored content, you know. So we were really able to push back where there was some, you know, some partners, some sponsors would be like, hey, we did this with the LA Clippers. Why can't we do it with you? And we would say, well, we've established a voice and a tone that our fans really, it resonates with them, and we don't want to jeopardize that by basically being a radio advertisement for you. So here's how we think we should do it. And I remember there was actually 7-Eleven was the one that wouldn't budge. And so we did it their way, but then also did it our way too, just uncontracted. And where we actually went to 7-Eleven and there was like this Slurpee cup thing and actually, you know, shot a GIF, and it was really fun. And the next time we reported back, showed the numbers side by side, and they were blown away. They're like, okay, you're right. You get it. Do it the way you want to do it and make sure you hit these talking points and we'll be good. So, you know, it's really, it got to a point too, where nothing would be sold in sponsorship, that would go on social without our blessing. And we were way ahead of the curve for that. There's still a lot of our clients at STN. I'm begging to get on the phone with sponsorship and, you know, their sponsorship department to kind of let them know, you know, there is a better way. You don't have to just agree to everything and slap it on social. You guys can work together.
Hell yeah. And before we shift to STN and just reset, having a great conversation with Chris Corvisto. Corvisto, Senior Director of Accounts for STN Digital. Just really enjoying this so far. I kind of want, before we shift to STN, want to hear a little about, I guess, when players start getting more involved in social, how active a role you guys played in kind of fostering that or making the most of it? I mean, I think we know that player accounts get, you know, if not better, more engagement, a better engagement rate even than a lot of the team accounts, let alone brand accounts. And, you know, when did social start to become, I guess it probably pretty early on with the young team there, but how did that enter the picture? How did you play a role, if at all? And, you know, did the Blazers kind of serve as that in-house training for them? Did they come to you? Did you guys work with them? Did you guys have some content that was designed for their accounts versus your accounts? I mean, there's so much that goes into it as that kind of evolved with the players. So how did that play out for Portland?
Yeah, so a couple of things. So one thing, in Portland, we were never allowed to ask a player to post something on our behalf with the you know, on the team's interest. So that was out the window. So with having, when I was in PR, when we drafted Damian and Myers Leonard in the same draft, 2012, you know, I had the chips just fell right, and our other PR guy couldn't go, our content guy couldn't go, so I was in New York doing both PR duties, you know, getting Damian around to interviews, but also creating content as a PR guy. So that was kind of my first, you know, dipping my toe into it. But so I was able to build a relationship with Damian and Myers, that, you know, as soon as he walked off the stage and did his ESPN interview, I was the first Blazer employee to shake his hand. So we had a built-in rapport that once cool. I shifted over to social, and then LaMarcus left the team and it was really Damian's team, you know, he kind of helped, you know, I remember several times when I would walk into the gym, whether it was during, you know, summer workouts or, you know, practice or whatever, and, you know, he would say what up to me, and that would kind of let everyone else know, like, hey, this guy's cool, like, you know, do some social stuff with him, whatever, you know, it kind of built that trust. Yeah, there was the trust there. And Damian's very social savvy, and his agency, Good One Sports, and Nate Jones over there, like, those, you know, that's one of the best agent player relationships I've witnessed. So just really fortunate to be able to have a guy that I met and built a bond with, and then his agency backs him, and it, you know, there was a lot of, you know, hey Dame, can I get you to do this? Can I get you to do that? Then CJ became a star, and you know, it was kind of falling in line with him. Mm-hmm. And you know, the guy, we just all kind of got it, and they had their own brands, but they also knew, you know, if I took a picture of them after the game, like, yo, where's that picture? I want to post it on Instagram.
Nice.
So there was a lot of synergy between the players and social.
And even now, do you think that team ops, coaches, GMs, and whatnot, are they past the point of, like, trying to control every little thing that goes out there? Like, if you guys are shooting video of a morning shoot around or whatever, they're worried they're going to give away some secret, or was that ever an issue with the Blazers, or was it pretty accepted early on that, hey, these guys know what they're doing, they're not going to put anyone in a bad light, they're not going to give away, you know, top secret stuff, and, you know, just let them do their thing, or was that a conversation you guys had to have at some point or even periodically?
No, I think we, there's always a sense of paranoia with basketball ops or, you know, whatever, football ops or baseball ops, where, you know, that's a family. They practice together, they eat together, they travel together, you know, from the massage therapist to the nutritionist to the assistant coaches, the players, like, it's a family. And then you're kind of viewed, not necessarily by the players, but the coaching staff and you know, front office as kind of an outsider. So not a whole lot of trust built there. But we were able to have conversations with Neil O'Shea, who was president of basketball ops, who, you know, a couple times during the season, we kind of have like a, you know, a state of the union where our broadcasters and our beat writers and social team have a chance to kind of, he would not tip us off, but let us know, like, here's the direction we're going. Some things I want you to hit on. So there was a little bit of synergy there. But there's, you know, there's always that in the back of their minds, that paranoia that, you know, something's going to get out that shouldn't get out, just because of all the horror stories you see, you know, on the internet these days. So there was definitely that hurdle. And then there was a lot of times where it was like, hey, this is closed practice, we'll let you in, you know, in 45 minutes or whatever. Right. So it wasn't the, you know, 100% access, but, you know, it was, it could have been a lot worse.
I'll resist any tangents into Burner Gate, but one more thing I wanted to STN real quick before it's a terrible stat. You guys did a great job of really promoting the players as individuals, as brands. I mean, I think one thing that stood out in my mind, I remember like a lot of plays on like movie posters featuring players. Like, I think there were some really fun ones back in the day that just stick in my mind even to this day, years later. And so when you guys are doing that kind of stuff, is it, you know, would the players give you feedback saying, oh, that was dope? Or would you think like, oh, is this going to rub a player the wrong way potentially? And how delicate is that, or was that?
I think, number one, like I basically had like, you know, the I guess the devil and the angel on both shoulders. Like, so I would look at our head of basketball ops, which was Neil, and then our head of business ops, which was Chris McGowan, the president that I've mentioned several times. Mm-hmm. You know, A, would Chris get mad about this? No. Okay. Would Neil get mad about this? No. Okay. We're safe. If either one of those, you know, checkpoints were like, eh, he might get mad about it, you know, then we'd have some issues. I remember when Chad tweeted the gun emoji and the horse emoji, I was actually at dinner with a group of us, and I was sitting next to our president, and I showed him, like, you know, as this thing unfolded. And I remember texting back and forth with Chad. That was kind of a fun, or I guess a memorable night.
Right.
But I asked him, I was like, hey, should I tweet, because we're playing the Grizzlies in the playoffs, should I tweet a bear and a heart emoji? And, you know, it was, we had a pretty direct line. If anything was kind of, towing the line, I was able to kind of get quick, response. And if there was any part of me that was like, he's probably not going to like this, I just wouldn't even bother. Anytime there's hesitation, you probably should trust that hesitation and not do it.
Yeah, and really cool, and speaks to, I think, why you're able to have success there. The fact that you had that kind of relationship with the president, I mean, that's not the norm in a lot of organizations. So that's really cool, and you know, allows you guys to have that empowerment, I guess. And
one more thing on him. My last year there was this Chandler Parsons incident where Chandler shot an air ball, and I tweeted from the team account, you know, I cut the GIF or whatever and tweeted, like, to be fair, the NBA 3-point line is really far away. And didn't think much of it because we do that type of trash all the time.
Yeah.
And after the game, Chandler tweeted back something about, you know, good luck in the lottery this year. And CJ jumped in and said, he tweeted, you know, I think it was something to the effect of, we hit the lottery by not signing you. And it kind of blew up, and we got a lot of heat, and the NBA sent this new rule about, you know, playing fair with other teams and not, you know, demeaning other teams. And
yeah.
I guess they, my boss called it the Chris Koivisto rule. But anyway, there was this ESPN story that Chris Haynes, who's a friend of mine, but not at that time, I was kind of mad at him, you know, kind of called us out. And eventually they tried to fine us, and it got rescinded. But I remember talking to our president, Chris, at the time, and was like, dude, what should I do? And he's like, man, just play it cool. I got your back. I'm going to have to say some stuff in the media, but, you know, you did the right thing. So nice. Being able to have a guy like that in your corner is just invaluable.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love that. Thanks for that anecdote. I do want to spend a couple minutes before this with Cheryl Stat talking about STN Digital. I mean, now you go from, you know, living, dying, breathing, sleeping, eating a single brand with the Trailblazers and to managing a lot of different accounts and, you know, taking on new clients, taking on new campaigns. So I guess what I really would love to hear some insight into is what it's like when you guys start from scratch or get a new client or get a new opportunity for a campaign, you know, whether it's an event or a team or a league. And is it a lot of, you know, them coming to you and saying, here's what we have in mind, how do we best execute it? Or, you know, do you guys kind of do an audit of them and say, here's the direction we think you should go, and here's why? How does that give and take work, you know, working with whether it's a team, league, media entity, whoever it may be?
You know, it all depends. We do so many different things. Basically, my kind of quick tagline is anything that goes on social media, we do. So anything from, you know, taking over the handles and doing community management to creating, you know, a content series, you know, one-off graphics, you know, going on site and turning around content in real time. You know, there's a lot of different things that we do. So it all depends on what it is. But if we're looking at, you know, a team like the Philadelphia Phillies is a recent client that we've been working really closely with. They basically wanted a new brand on social. They wanted some eye-catching stuff that would really stand out. And basically, that when someone says that, we kind of take a look. We take a step back, look at everything they're doing, look at different options, you know, start with mood boards and, you know, really narrow down to what they really are looking for. So with look and feel, we really dissect and take, you know, best in class examples and show it to the client and say, is this what you're talking about? Really get real specific. So branding is being a big part of it. When you're looking at a campaign, it's, you know, what are your goals? Do you want web traffic? Do you want engagement on social? Do you want to grow your audience? Do you want to increase tune-ins? It all depends on what their goals are. And kind of like what I was saying earlier about, you know, I asked Wayne, what do you want us to be? Number one in engagement, number one in web traffic, video starts, whatever it is, we take that goal and then work backwards and figure out how to get you there. So, you know, it's a mentality that, you know, our owner at STN, David Brickley, has been really, you know, he's also given me a lot of leash, a lot of leeway. There's a lot of things I had to learn going to the agency side, but you know, once I really got in that driver's seat, I was able to kind of, I guess, impute the stuff that I had in Portland into all of our clients. And it's really fun to, you know, go from just creating graphics to now the Phillies, after we did our branding and our other packages, now we're just on a consulting retainer with them where twice a week we'll get on the phone, or twice a month we'll get on the phone with them and dive into their analytics, look at comps, look at, you know, industry trends. And, you know, that's the real fun stuff that I enjoy doing is the strategy. So, you know, it all depends on what it is that we're doing. and what the company's goal is, and then we try to put all of our resources behind that and make their goals become a reality.
And is it really, and it sounds like it's the case of the Phillies, where you guys might be more hands-on building the graphics, building the GIFs, and maybe even some of the video, and then, with the ultimate goal of still being there as a guide, helping them, understand their strategy, what's working, what's not working, but I guess the whole teach a man to fish versus give him fish or whatever. Is that the goal, is to sort of help them help themselves even more? I mean, especially now you're seeing a lot of conversation around, agency versus in-house and that kind of back and forth there. So if you're able to discuss this, what is that process like, or that mindset like? Is it really to, we want eventually you guys not to need us to do all the content creation. We'll still help you, but we want sort of you to take the fishing rod yourself.
Yeah, no, that's 1,000%. Like, we will, we're working on a big branding project with a couple of, with one TV network and a couple other teams and colleges where, similar, we'll go through the mood board process and really get the look and feel that they want. But ultimately, we hand over a set of 10 to 20 templates that are easy to update, easy to create. We do how-to guides and make the PSD or the After Effects or the Premiere files really, really intuitive and easy to use. And then we'll hand off a style guide and really just let them free. We don't want to be jerks about it and be like, you have to come back to us, to get the secret sauce. We want to hand off everything and set them up for success. So the next time they're looking for help, they'll come back to us because, it's really hard to get, it's a lot harder to get new business than it is return business. So just naturally through bending over backwards and, being fully transparent and helping our partners out as much as we can, they seem to keep coming back for more.
Yeah, I love that. It's definitely well said too. Before you sort of say that, I would be remiss not to bring this up. So as everyone knows, Complex does, annual rankings of NBA accounts and NBA Twitter accounts, usually ends up being the Blazers number one, and I'm sure you didn't mind that rain while you were there. And STN kind of took it to another level, actually having some of the accounts or some of the people behind the accounts, some of the social media pros working with the teams themselves, anonymously rate some of the accounts out there in the MVP, the social media MVP of the season. So I found it really fascinating. Some of the open-ended insights or quotes from some of the voters was really, really good stuff. So tell me about, I guess, how that idea came about and some of the key learnings that you guys found as to what went into crowning that top 10. And, for people that hadn't checked it out yet, I recommend it. And the Sixers came out on top kind of by a landslide.
Yeah, no, that's, as soon as I got to STN, I knew that the people on the keys, the social media managers, the editors, the people that kind of drove the social brand, really don't get a lot of credit. So I kind of knew that, any chance that we would have to give them any sort of shine, that would be amplified. So from day one, I wanted to do that. We finally got around to it this year with the NBA. But leading up to that with NFL and MLB, we had a similar strategy where we would reach out to our own partners or clients or just industry leaders and ask them their perspective, like who was the best on social in baseball this year. And then they would give kind of a written explanation and kind of who they voted for, which did pretty decent. But when the NBA came around, I really wanted to, just having been on that side myself, like, and having, we were number one in Complex for 3 years, which was great, but the people that voted at Complex weren't really in the day-to-day grind, right? And it was kind of an outsider's perspective. We had the opportunity. We won the NBA's Digital Innovator of the Year twice when I was in Portland, and that was voted on by peers. That was all the other 30 teams voting, and that one meant a lot more than the Complex ones, even though that was just internal and there was no article written or anything like that, because it's validation from, the people that are totally in the trenches with you. So I wanted to take that mentality, especially after seeing the Complex rankings, and they've gotten, I love Complex, but they've gotten lazy lately. And, their examples are only a couple weeks old, right? And it's encapsulating the whole season. So it's not really doing justice to, the people that are working 365 days a year. So that was kind of a thought that I had. Still have a lot of good relationships in the NBA, and Tested it a little bit, asked a few people, and they said, yeah, let's do it. So, we didn't get 100% participation, which I expected. There's, some people take it really political, and didn't want to even touch it. So I get that, but we had definitely had enough to kind of see some trends. And yeah, Philly came out on number one, and they were number one in complex. So they're definitely, they have the sauce right now. They have the juice. And, the comments though really meant a lot. I remember talking to Kurt about, the things people were saying to him. And, you rarely get a chance to see that. People give you like these shallow shout outs on Twitter, like, oh, the Sixers are doing great. They're the best on social, which is great and cool and all, but never actually from a source inside the trenches.
Right.
So I think that carries a lot more weight and validation.
Yeah, just super well done. And I really enjoyed it myself, and I look forward to seeing more across more leagues, and kudos to you guys for putting it together.
Oh, for sure, man.
Chris, this time flew by. Like, I seriously looked down at our recording, and it kept on going, which is good because we had so much more to talk about still. We'll have a little fun with you coming up in our Crisscross segment, which I'm very proud of, that name. But first, this episode's a shareable stat. We'll be back with that in just a moment.
Such a good conversation with Chris Corvisto, a senior director of accounts for STN Digital. Can really talk to him all day. The time just flew by, and I learned a lot, and I look forward to talking more with him in the future for sure. And we'll have a little more fun with him on this episode in our Crisscross segment. And before we get to the Crisscross segment, we have this episode's shareable stat. And, I usually give stats that are about trends or practices, but this is a stat that really stood out to me this week, and it came from the Twitter Sports Summit, or really just the NFL social media get-together, where they met at Twitter, they met at Facebook, they went to Instagram, and a few social media pros, a few social media managers, directors, tweeted out a photo of the group of people that were there, the group of people from representing all of the clubs in the NFL, and a really cool stat came out, and that is that 44% of the NFL social media directors that are in attendance were females. And it's really cool to see that the fact that ladies and gentlemen both love sports a lot. There's a lot of sports fans among them, and they are just as talented and able to do the job as men are. And it's really and there's a lot of females in the social media sports industry that really do a tremendous job, a lot of thought leaders in the space, a lot of people that I highly, highly look up to and respect. And it's great to see, and it's super interesting always, of course, to see how female sports fans are looked at and treated. Going beyond the social media pros now and looking more at the fans, it came out also at the recent hashtag sports event that there was a great quote from the CMO of the NHL, Heidi Browning, where she said, they stay away, they don't pink it and shrink it. That's not the right way to market to female sports fans. Now, female sports fans are different in some ways from men's sports fans, just like, people of different socioeconomic backgrounds are a little bit different. People that play the sport versus people that don't. People of different age ranges and just parts of the city they live in and upbringings. There's a lot of things that distinguish sports fans, but there's not a female way to market to a sports fan. There's not a female version of a sports fan. Sports content, good sports content, tends to transcend the gender spectrum, tends to transcend, whoever it is. And that's really where good content starts with. And it's great to see that the barriers are breaking down, so to speak, that, women are being respected as sports fans. And there's a lot of them out there, and a lot of them also who are behind your favorite team's social media accounts. A lot of really talented females. And it's great to see that, while the sports industry is still very much male-dominated when it comes to employment, especially, at the top, that the social media space and creative spaces and digital space is one where women are getting a chance and really thriving. So 44% of the NFL's social media pros are female. So it's a good chance that your favorite team has a female behind the Twitter voice, the Facebook posts, the Instagram accounts, etc., etc. All right, that's the social stat. Shout it out to the masses and enjoy the Crisscross segment coming up as I return to our conversation with Chris Corvisto of STN Digital.
All right, back from the episode's shareable stat, and I'm joined once again by Chris Corvisto. He is the senior director of accounts for STN Digital. Had a fantastic conversation. You hit a slam dunk. You knocked down all your threes. Whatever suits you the best. Chris, are you now ready to play a little Crisscross?
Let's rock.
All right, number one for you. Going back to your Western Oregon days, you came up writing a little bit in PR and all that. So tell me, you're writing for the Western Oregon Journal. What was the favorite story you wrote for the newspaper?
My favorite story that I wrote was probably writing about the baseball team. They made a deep run I was only doing it for about a semester, but they made a deep run one year, and it was really fun because I'm not a huge baseball guy, but definitely basketball and football. So it was cool to kind of be on the beat for that.
Very nice. It's always good to get your feet wet in another sport for sure. And baseball is one of my loves, and so I can definitely appreciate that. Mm-hmm. All right, number two for you, Chris. This might be tough, so you can name multiple ones if you need to. But I want to know the Trailblazers player during your time there that was the best when it came to content. Who was your go-to guy when it came to creating content for the Blazers?
I mean, I want to be creative and say somebody like unique, but it was Damian Lillard, 100%.
Yeah, he really seemed to get it, and it's really cool to I mean he's someone I think whose story is well known now. But to see a guy come from Weber State, however you pronounce it, to now. You know, having a shoe deal, having a brand, and he really was. I want to say the first of the small school guys to make it big, and you know, it's cool to hear that he was just as good for Blazer social media as he was for his own brand.
Yeah, no, he understood that I think to get to the point where he was, he had to do some self promotion, that stuck with him, and he did really get it. So it was easy, always one take, always a smile on his face. Really easy to work with.
Very nice. Good to hear about Dame. All right, number three for you. During your time with Blazers, this is like picking children. Tell me your favorite piece of content you produced or posted during your time in Portland.
We did a lot of fun stuff. We did a lot of trolling, a whole lot of trolling. probably my favorite was... Well, anytime the NBA called us the next day and we're like, guys, we got to talk about this. That was probably my favorite. That happened a lot. There were some deep cuts where like it was a kind of a sneak diss, a hidden diss that people didn't get. There are countless ones there. I think the go-to, though, is definitely an April Fool's joke we did where we announced that the Moda Center would have a retractable roof the following season. And my buddy Brian did a rendering that made it, it looked like it was a retractable roof in, downtown Portland. And we actually had three of the four TV affiliate news stations call to confirm that was true.
Oh, wow.
We had radio stations calling to ask. We did, they came out and did a feature on me and TJ that night at the game. It was just kind of some joke that people, I guess it was too, they took it seriously.
Oh my, that is epic. I mean, it's hard to get anything past people on April 1st, and that's incredible, man. Kudos.
Yeah, that was fun.
Number four for you, and maybe accepting any Trailblazers or former Trailblazers while you were there, I want to know, number four is the pro athlete that does the best job on social media, and why?
I honestly think it's Juju, man. Like, just following him from a distance. I don't even think I follow him, but I see his stuff always pop up. From, the thing with the bike to his mom making him take out the trash, even though he's a millionaire, but when he's back home. That's really what people want to see, is that inside look to your daily life. So, definitely Juju from the Steelers.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. I mean, he's become a pretty good player on the field himself, but even before he kind of broke out or before he became a consistent star, he was a star on social media, and that really speaks to how if you do things right, you can really blow up your brand, and now he's poised for more success on and off the field, perhaps.
100%.
All right, number five for you. I want to hit up your tastes in pop culture, and I want to know your favorite musical artist of all time, and also your favorite TV show of all time. It's always fun to get to know people.
You cut out during most of that.
Okay. I'll start over this question. The three, two, okay. One. All right, number five for you. Kind of always fun to get to know people a little bit. So I want to know, hitting up your tastes in pop culture, I want to know your favorite musical artist of all time and also your favorite TV show of all time.
Man, that's it's really tough. All time favorite, probably like Big Ear Tupac, but I'm definitely going to say like currently it's J. Cole, 100%.
Okay.
And then favorite TV show, it's got to be The Wire, man. People that haven't seen The Wire, like, they're not going to go back and watch it because it wasn't in HD. So you either kind of had to watch it when it was hot or you don't know about it. But by far, it kind of got me into that binge-watching phase right before Netflix really boomed was binge-watching The Wire.
Very nice. All right. So J. Cole and The Wire. I like it. All right, number six for you. This is definitely a good one. I want to know your number one tip for keeping up with the industry. I mean, this industry, social media, and sports changes every single day. So, if someone want to know how do you keep up with it all, what's your number one tip?
I think as you get older, and I'm definitely older for the industry standards with kids and a wife and mortgage and all that stuff. I think you need to keep people around you that are just as hungry and into the industry as you were. So you always got to have that younger, energetic person that is up on every trend. And, kind of looks at you like you're an idiot if you don't already know what's going on. Like that type of enthusiasm for, landscape changes and shifts in the industry. Because at the end of the day, as you progress in life, you're not going to be able to keep up with everything on your own. So you kind of need to get the cliff notes from someone. So I say keep somebody young around you.
Yeah, I love that. I always tell people and sometimes it kind of makes me creepy at times, I guess. But if I meet someone, if I'm making small talk, I'll ask them, what social media apps do you use, and what do you do on Snapchat? Do you snap with friends? Do you look at brand stories? How about Instagram stories? Are you aware of IGTV? And it's always cool. The world is kind of your focus group at times because everyone uses some sort of form of social media.
Yeah, you gotta learn. You gotta learn from people too. You can't act like you know everything because you'll end up getting burned. Yeah. Get people around you that are smarter than you and learn from them.
Hell yeah, I love that. Lots of smart friends and lots of just kids you can learn from who actually live it every day.
All exactly. Right.
Number seven for you. I want to know the most recent social media content you saw that really stuck with you. If you think back, a couple days, something that really stuck out in your mind.
It's really, really, really basic. But when Ben Simmons won Rookie of the Year, Nike Basketball did a really simple carousel on Instagram.
Yeah.
Where one half said, something about not a rookie, and the other half, said like the rookie or whatever.
Yeah.
Very simple, very clean, but it stuck out to me. And we actually have these creative brainstorms every week where everyone in our company, is required to bring 2 to 3. Things that they saw in space over the last week and kind of talk about them. So things are always fresh at our company, and it can be as simple as a basic Instagram carousel.
Oh, that's so great. I love the idea of kind of crowdsourcing kind of the best of, and you can learn so much from what others are doing in the industry. That's fantastic. All right, I want to get people hungry now, and we always like to talk about a little bit of food on this podcast. So number eight for you, Chris, I want to know the best food to get in Portland and where to get it. And also the best view you have down there in your year and a half in San Diego.
Oh, man. Portland's really tough. And you know what? Since I've been down here, I'm sure there's like 15 other new restaurants that are hot. But it's kind of common. I would always take people there when they visited. It's a place called Tilt. It's a burger restaurant there in the Pearl District, downtown Portland, that, very Portland-esque. But with a little bit of mainstream flavor to it, where it's not too wacky, but it's wacky enough to make you feel like you're in Portland.
Okay. And how about down in San Diego? What's the best you've had so far down there in my hometown?
Oh, my goodness. San Diego, best food. When we first moved here, we lived in Little Italy, and there were so many pizza shops around there between the between the different pizza shops that we had in Little Italy and a lot of the restaurants we run into here in La Jolla, golly, is it okay if I take a TBD on that one?
Of course, no problem at all. You gotta figure it out. You have to figure it out. So the next time I visit San Diego, you gotta take me to wherever the best place is. I'll say surprise me. So you have to figure it out by then.
Exactly. Okay, cool. We'll do that.
All right, number nine for you, Chris. I want to know the most memorable game you've ever attended as a fan. What's that? What's that one that you're like, that will always be my favorite memory?
I worked at the Blazers 10 years, so I probably saw dang near 1,000 games and didn't get a chance to see a lot of other games. So it'd definitely be a Blazer game. When Damian hit the series winner against Houston, you know, it's kind of unique. Everyone else saw it, but at the time I was in PR and I was handling our like celebrity services. So, you know, and anytime we had a, you know, someone in town for Nike or whatever, mm-hmm. And wanted to come to the game, I would kind of host them. So Steven Jackson, from the Rams, Oregon State, the Rams, he played bounced around the NFL. He was there, you know, one of the first couple rows. Chandler Parsons hit a putback with like 0.9 seconds left. And he was like, let's get out of here before the crowds, you know, pile out of here. So I'm walking him to his car, and in the concourse, you know, they come out of timeout, and Damian hits this miraculous three-pointer that is legendary in Portland now. And I look at him, he looks at me, and we like kind of like hug each other like, holy shit, what just happened? And then people just come pouring out of the tunnels, like in out of the vomitories into the concourse. And they're running around celebrating, and they'd be like half celebration, then like, oh shit, that's Steven Jackson, and then back to celebrating. So that was definitely one of the most memorable moments, one of the biggest moments in Blazer history. I actually missed live, but got to see it from a different angle.
That's so cool. What a fun story. I love that. Number 10. This is probably gonna be either you're gonna look like a genius, or you're gonna look like you don't know what you're talking about by the time someone listens to this. So number 10 is, where is LeBron James gonna be playing the 2018-2019 NBA season?
I'm gonna say Cleveland.
All right, Cleveland Cavaliers.
I'm gonna keep it boring. Yeah, man. I think, you know, all this talk about the Lakers and the Sixers and all this stuff, I think you might just stay put.
Hey, I believe it. I buy it. No one really knows for sure right now as we're talking, and we'll know soon enough, hopefully. But you know, a decision 3.0 is on its way for sure.
Let me do like 5 different takes on where he's gonna go. We'll just edit that one in.
I love that. No, we'll dub in the right answer, so you'll sound like a genius.
Nice.
All right, Chris, had a great time in our crisscross segment. Your chance to take over the podcast. Tell us your social media all-star to follow. Someone, it can be a blogger, someone on Twitter, who they are and why they're worth following.
You know, I think that there's a lot of different people to follow, and you can kind of get in these different, these rabbit holes of, you know, NBA Twitter, basketball Twitter, yeah. And then, you know, that all of a sudden you're consumed by that. And that's kind of the standard. Or it can be, you know, sports business, you know, with people like yourself. But I think just in general, if I had to start fresh and could only follow one person, does it have to be a person or can it be a brand?
Either one works for me.
I would probably go with Cycle.
Nice.
So it's like they're the shit, man. Like I look at them, and I remember I followed them way back in the day when they first started, and always thought of them as like a more polished bleacher. Yeah. And then, you know, they had their acquisition with ESPN, and they blow me away every single day. It's like, how did they unearth this story and make content out of it? And it's fascinating when you talk about not doing what everybody else is doing. They're definitely not beating the same stories into the ground. So Cycle, 100%.
That's a really good one. No one said that on the podcast before, and I wholeheartedly agree. What they do, you know, before when they were with Laundry Service and after that and Jason Stein, just really, really good stuff. And everything they put out is just, like you said, really, really well done. That's a great one for sure. All right, and how about yourself and STN Digital? Where can we find you on the social medias?
You know, it's just my name at Chris Coivisto, which is hard to spell, but if you spell it right, you'll find me. Same thing, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, MySpace, all that stuff. And then STN Digital, same thing at STN Digital, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, STNDigital.com. You know, try to keep it consistent. So that's where you can find us.
Always love when it's easy. And Chris, cannot thank you enough for giving us some of your time today. I know you just got done with a whirlwind last couple weeks, working with NBA and a few projects, and it never slows down. There's always a client to work with, a new project to take on, a new campaign to start. So really appreciate you giving us some of your time and some of your insight. Just really good stuff today with the podcast.
100%, man. Glad we were able to finally connect.
And until we meet again down in San Diego.
All right, brother.
Really enjoyed the chat with Chris Coivisto, Senior Director of Accounts for STN Digital. really smart guy, really thoughtful, really fun to talk to, easy to talk to, and glad we finally made this chat happen, you know, not being more than 150 or so miles apart. So until next time, though, thanks for listening and downloading. I am your host, Neil Horwitz. You can find me on LinkedIn as well as on Twitter. Hit up the website for other episodes and content, dsmsports.net. And, of course, subscribe. Do whatever you got to do with the podcast. Review it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, and all podcast platforms. Until next time, this is Neil Horwitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.